Okay, good morning, everybody. Today is it's December 31st. It's the 13th day of Tevet. Easy to remember when I started with Tevet was Thursday. Today's actually, I realize it's the secular calendar, but I'll mention it anyway. Today's my great aunt's birthday, and she turns 97 today. Unfortunately, she's not doing very well, so she needs a refuah shleima, so she should have a refuah shleima. My mother actually went this early this morning to fly down to be with her, so she should have a refuah shleima. I want to really thank everyone for coming this morning. It's pretty amazing on Sunday. It's a long weekend, right? It's really kol hakavod. Special thanks to Rabbi Ziering, who just stepped out, but he'll be back in a moment. So really thank you everyone for coming. What I want to deal with today, and this is it's a great topic, because we live in a world which is hyper about marketing. Where this time of year, the mitzvah hayom is about shopping, whether it's online shopping, whether it's store shopping. You know, my son had a big test last week to get into like American University. So he's like, okay, I'm actually going to go out on a Motzei Shabbat, right? My oldest son, right? So where did he go out with his friends? Like Devon Mills. I'm like, really? That's where you know, like it's mamish, like mitzvah hayom is shopping. And everyone is vying for your business, for our business. And they're doing whatever they can to get that business. And it's many ways, a lot of it is deceptive. And I want to actually compare a little bit the Torah's view on advertising and marketing, the secular view on advertising and marketing, and see what is the difference between them, and what could we do? Well, I don't know. Maybe we could do it. How could we impact the secular world and maybe changing some of their marketing to make it more quote-unquote kosher? And we'll just, again, there's a lot to talk about here. It's fascinating. And that's kind of the introduction. And one of the things that led me to do this was twofold. One, when I'm at Ryerson, anybody from Ryerson? Ryerson, the room, the Hillel room, Hillel rents an office space, and it's by Dundas Square. And so where we learn, right, is like literally you look over Dundas Square where the billboards are like 100 feet. How they're like, it's like Times Square, massive. So you're literally in your face are these like, and every time we go, every couple weeks, they kind of change these billboards. So it's always, we always comment on like, what are they marketing? What are they saying? And so I've been thinking about it a lot, about, you know, what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. The second thing that led me to do this was this marketing campaign that Rogers had, which I don't know how many of you are familiar with it. Rogers, they advertised with fewest drop calls. Anyone remember that marketing shtick that Rogers had? Goes back a few years. Mr. Stafford probably remembers, right? And I remember at the time, it really bothered me. Because every time I was on Rogers, I would drop a call. I'd be like, what do you mean? It's mamish beferush, fewest drop calls. And how could they make such a statement? So that bothered me. That bothered me a lot. So if you take a look, let's go backwards for a second. And say, what's the purpose of marketing? I wanted to ask you, what's the purpose of marketing and advertising? Why do they do it? What would you say? What are they trying to do? What's the function of a company trying to market or advertise? What are they trying to? Yeah.
To increase their awareness, brand, or actual consumption.
Okay, so there's one thing that's very important. It's called brand awareness, right? If you don't know that a brand exists, then no one's going to purchase it, right? Coca-Cola spends $2 billion in marketing advertising a year. What's amazing about Coca-Cola was, I remember years ago, they advertised the CFO, whoever's in charge of the head of sales, and he says, I spend $2 billion. My problem is I don't know which $1 billion works, so I have to spend two. Right? I mean, that's incredible. But the joke is, everywhere there's two things. Everywhere in the world exists two things. Coca-Cola and Chabad. Right? For every reason, people chuckle at the Chabad line, not the Coca-Cola line. Right? But it's an amazing brand awareness. Everyone knows about Coca-Cola. I mean, the entire, like Santa, the red and the white, is Coca-Cola's brilliant marketing campaign. I mean, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. And of course, sales, right? If no one knows that you want kids or adults to buy your product. So you have to get out there. That's just the reality of the world. Okay. What I want to do is, though, I want to focus on what is my responsibility as a marketing person. right? Not the purchaser. So I'm talking about the marketing end. So let's just focus on that dimension for today. So what is my responsibility? So what would you say if you had to, you know, based on what you know, what you think, what do you think your responsibility should be? From in terms of what claims can you make, what can you say, what can't you say? What would you argue? Give an example of something which you can say, you can't say. How would you say it? Yeah.
I know that we have laws in Canada against marketing towards children, so you can't make the children's toy do things it can't do in real life. You can't make it bigger than it is in real life. So that's why you never see Chewbacca as a fully grown Chewbacca. You see him as a toy always, or the Barbie Playhouse is never. Well, I'm gonna play it. It's just a playhouse.
Right, you'll never have an example where a child is like walking into this like overgrown playhouse. Now, why not? Because that's
children are vulnerable. They can't. It's been shown they can't differentiate very well between what's real and.
So, what would be the problem with me making an oversized house where a child could like dream and like enter this house? What might be the problem then? Yeah. Okay, okay, very good. So it's interesting that you made two different comments there, right? You said a comment you can't, and this of course goes back to what we discussed 2 weeks ago about lying, right? You can't lie, and then you said another comment which was?
You have to tell the truth, but I'm going to stick with the first one. Like, you can't lie, that should be like the main one.
Okay, so there's a very big difference between telling the truth and lying. Why? What's the difference between them? Right, there's a very big gray zone in between. So the question is, what can you say and what can't you say? So let's read for a second box number one. Anyone want to read the laws of advertising according to the Competition Bureau? This is, by the way, straight off the Government of Canada's website on the Competition Bureau of the Government of Canada. This is a legal piece of information. Anyone want to read? Volunteer?
Sure.
Thank you. Go ahead.
The misleading advertising and labeling provisions enforced by the Competition Bureau prohibit making any deceptive representations for the purpose of promoting a product or a business interest and encourage the provision of sufficient information to allow consumers to make informed choices.
What's it saying? Let's make a duke. Let's try to make a duke in the Government of Canada. Right, so what are they saying? What can't you do?
Don't mislead the base.
Don't mislead. So... Sorry?
And you have to give enough information.
Okay, so we see here they said you can't mislead, you have to give enough information. Let's continue. Go ahead. The false?
The false or misleading representations and deceptive marketing practices provisions of the Competition Act contain a general prohibition against materially false or misleading representations. They also prohibit making performance representations which are not based on adequate and proper tests, misleading warranties and guarantees, false or misleading ordinary selling price representations, untrue, misleading, or unauthorized use of tests and testimonials, bait and switch selling, double ticketing, and the sale of a product above its advertised price.
Okay, what's double ticketing? What's double ticketing? They do it all the time. What? Oh, no, that's not double ticketing. No. It's not a... What's double ticketing? Yeah?
Is it when you charge twice? So you charge an extra fee?
I don't think so. The double ticketing is they put two tickets on the same merchandise and they say regular and they say sale. So they put two tickets on the same thing, and this way you're assuming that you're buying like a deal. You're really not. They actually never charge that price. So this, what would you say about this paragraph? Good, from stark, machmir meiko. What would you say? You like it? It's good. It's good. It's good? You like it? You think it's fair?
Sounds pretty good.
Sounds pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Here's the problem. How do you enforce it? The problem is that although it appears to be very, shall we say, proper, the enforcement component is extremely complicated. Because how do you enforce it? The standard that exists today, if you actually want to take it to court, is that you need to prove, I need to prove that what they're doing, they've actually made money on, because it has to do with torts, and so I have to show that there's actual damages that exist. If I can't prove damages, it's very hard to actually get money from a company. And so even though perhaps what they say seems to be very good, from a practical perspective, there's not enough hanging over the head of these companies to ensure that they're actually being honest and they're being just. And that's a major problem. If you take a look at online, a lot of people who criticize, again, this is more in America than in Canada, that they say is it's true that on paper, the marketing and advertising is actually a very good threshold. The problem is twofold. One, enforcement, because unless you can prove damages, it was just very, very hard to do, and intent. And also, the other major issue, although it says in here that you need to do what? Adequate and proper tests. That is the line that got Rogers into trouble. Because what happened was, they went to Rogers and said, fewest dropped calls. Really? What? Prove it. And they couldn't prove it definitively, and they were forced to pull that ad. They were forced to pull that ad because they actually... So the problem is that making a lot of claims, and I'll give you a few examples, right? As we go along. What I want to do before I give you a few examples, let's just take a few moments and look at a few sources that the Gemara actually talks about. We're not going to get to all of them. I'll throw you... Let's take a look at source number 2 and then move on maybe to number 3. So the Gemara in Baba Metzia, says, Ein maf richsin lo asa adam v'lo asa kelim. So it said you're not allowed to, the language here that's used is you're not allowed to adorn. Okay, what exactly is that referring to? Tana Rabbanan. In Mashraftim at the Behema v'novchim b'kirbayim v'inshorin at the basar b'mayim. So what, let's say I want to sell meat. So what would I do? I would do something to make it look like my meat actually looks much, shall we say, nicer than it really is. I would inject a dye into it. Or I'd blow up the lungs to make it look more, you know, puffy. When I'd sell it. Says the Braita, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do it. Right? Why can't you do it? Because I'm giving an impression that the volume, that the size is perhaps much larger, or the fact that the meat is redder, maybe it looks a little bit healthier. And so that's why it is forbidden. Now, the question is going to be, if you go to the bottom of the source number 2, what are they referring to? They actually, the conclusion of the Gemara is, it's not so simple. When are you not allowed to do these things? Here, look at the last three lines, which run to the English. It can be decorated as doing so merely enhances its intrinsic beauty. That ruling in the Mishnah, according to what adornment is prohibited, is referring to a case of old merchandise as the adornment is meant to conceal its flaws. The conclusion of the Gemara, however, when are you not allowed to do these things? Only if you're going to conceal a flaw in an item. Right? That's the conclusion of the Gemara. But if I have a brand new piece of meat, fresh piece of meat, I actually would be allowed to do, if I want to show it off nicely, I could perhaps potentially enhance it, because I'm not showing off a flaw. I'm not allowed to cover a flaw, but I'm allowed to enhance. It's all, you know, like I take a red apple, I can make it shinier. Why? There's no flaw in a red apple. But I'd be allowed to make my apple shinier. That's actually permitted. So the conclusion of the Gemara is, if you're covering up a flaw, that's usur, that's forbidden. But to make something which is already nice, nicer, more visually appealing, I have red apple and I have a shiny red apple. Anything wrong with making a shiny red apple? Nothing wrong? Am I? If under the apple, it's totally bruised inside, but you don't see that because there's a shiny covering over it, that would be a problem. But if the apple is a good apple, right? Then, in fact, it'd be totally fine to make it shiny, shiny red. That's the... And take a look at the Rambam writes in source number 3, Asur l'ramot b'nei adam b'mekach u'memkar or lignov et datam. You're not allowed to cheat anybody in business, and to, of course, deceit them and trick them. Doesn't matter if it's a Jew or a non-Jew. Echad ve'kochav ve'echad yisar shav mi'davar zeh. Hayodesh yish mekaramum yodio lelokeach. If you have a blemish, you have to say so. Blemished apples. How's that going to go over at Sobeys, right? Imagine the Sobeys had two different bins, right? Blemished apples and regular apples.
We have that in the street.
No way.
At a fruit shop, you can buy like a fruit cheetah. you said it that way.
That happened in No Frills too. Like you can buy imperfect fruits for like half the price.
They call them imperfect.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good. In No Frills they do that?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I guess I don't shop in No Frills too often. What? Okay, good. Great. Okay, wonderful. Right. That's awesome. Are they Makbid? And did you find them? Yeah, okay. That's great. What?
They're not, you know, unsafe to eat.
Right. They're not like, you know, 3 weeks old filled with worms and maggots, right? Okay.
They're just not the traditional apple.
They're just not your regular apple? Okay, great. Listen, that's totally fine, right? Listen, for some people, that makes a lot of sense, right? Okay, good. Great. Thank you. But you have to tell the person, you have to tell your purchasers that this is, you need to know, these are the facts. Right? Of course, and even, by the way, not just, even using words you're not allowed to do. And we'll come back to that in a minute. Flip the page for a second. Again, if you have the original photocopy, so it's the back, if you're printed on one side of things, just flip the page. Another Gemara, which a lot of people refer to, is source number four. And source number four says the following. Listen to this example. Harav Meir Omer. Al Yisra Hev Adam L'Chavirot Lis'od Etzov Yedea Bo Sheina Soed. You're not allowed to invite somebody. Hey, you want to come for Shabbos lunch? And you know they're out of town. Or you know they have a bar mitzvah. Or you know their great uncle came in from Australia. Right? Shout out to Danny. Right? So in those cases, you're not allowed to do that. Why? Why can't you invite somebody knowing that they can't come? Name is Das. You're trip, right? You can't do that. Again, is it costing them a penny? They're not losing money. Now, where's the issue here? And this is an idea that exists. It's called undeserved goodwill. Is that, oh my goodness, they invite, you know that they're invited. Your neighbor told you that the Cohens are invited to the house for Shabbos lunch. So you owe them an invitation. And you, what do? You invite them also, knowing that they already have an invitation for Shabbos lunch. Why do you do that? Well, the Kubricks invite us for meal. Oh. Can't come, I guess. Yeah, I invite them the next time. Maybe just, right? Or at least, oh well, they tried tabs over. That's so nice of them. Because they might have this additional favor, they might like you better. You're undeserved goodwill. You're tricking them. You didn't really want to have them over for lunch, right? That was considered an inappropriate thing to do. So again, there's no monetary value necessarily. Right? You know he's not going to be able to come. Right? You absolutely know that he's not going to be able to come. And at the same time, you want to give somebody a gift, and you know for a fact that there's no way they're going to accept such a gift. Another example, Lo yiftach lo chaviot ha-mechrod le-chanvani, elim ken hodio. So this is a weird situation because we don't live in this world. But in those days, in the times of Chazal, there are these big vats of wine. So what would happen? I have, let's say, a... You ever seen those like those big glass like carboys over there? So they have 30 liters of wine. So I would open it up and I'm going to really sell it in the market. But to open it up is like a big deal. You don't open these up so quickly. So when I have a guest come to my house, I know that 3 hours from now I'm opening it up to sell to the market. My guest comes over and he sees me opening it up. He thinks, wow, Greenberg is honoring me by opening up his new barrel of wine. But really, why am I doing it? Not because of this guy. I'm doing it because I'm opening up 3 hours later to sell in the market. So that's a problem. Because this guy is saying, wow, Greenberg is honoring me for opening up his vat of wine. Really, I'm not doing it because of him. I'm doing it because I'm selling it. That, says the Gemara, is a problem. Unless I tell you. Oh, by the way, I'm opening this up. It's not for you. I'm not opening this up because I'm showing you honor and respect. I'm opening up anyways in 3 hours from now. How many people do that today? Okay, let's continue the Gemara. So, okay, those are the examples that the Gemara talks about. Again, there's a lot here to discuss, but we'll leave it at that. There's one case that I want to jump to. That's the end of source four. Again, it's all part of the same Gemara, but it's an important case. Let's read the Aramaic. I'll go back more to the translation. So they were traveling. Marzutra was traveling, and as he's traveling, he runs into two gentlemen by the names of Rav Safra and Rava. So what happens? Rav Safra, Havikai Atu Lesikra.
Pagwadade, they run into each other. Havisavar, apie, have dekatai, dekato, amar lehu, lama lehu lebravchan, detrach v'atu kulahai. So as they are, Marzudra turns to them and says, listen, why'd you come out to greet me for? Right? Like you're, so again, you have two different camps, right? You have, who's it again? It's Marzutra, you have Marzutra Rav Nachman over here, and you have Rav Safra and Rava over here. And they're heading out this way. All of a sudden, this party encounters this party, let's say two-thirds of the way in. And they say, oh wow, it's so nice that you came to greet me. He said, oh, I wasn't really coming to greet you. He was a doleador. I wasn't coming to greet you. I was what? Just heading that direction. Right? I was heading to your city. I wasn't coming to greet you. That's the case the Gemara talks about. Amar Rav Safra, that's the conversation. So then he turns to Rav Safra, turns to him. Rav Safra, who's Rav Safra with? Yeah, Rav Safra is with Rava. And says, Anun lo have yad. Yadinan tekate mar. You have a yadinan tve have tochinan. Now, if I would have known that you were coming, I would have been matriach myself to come and greet you. Amar le Rava, matam amar le hachi, dech lishte le date. So, Rava turns to who? Who is Rava with? Rav Safra says, Rav Safra, why did you say that to him? Why did you tell him that you were, in fact, coming to greet him? Why did you tell him that you were on your way anyways? Because he kind of like insulted him. Oh, that wasn't really coming to greet you. Nah, I would have known you were coming to come to greet you. But you were coming. Why did you say that? Why did you feel you needed to make that provision to say I wasn't really coming to greet you? What's his response? Amar le v'hakai matinan le. You know, he made him feel bad. The guy was distraught over it. You have a deka mate nafshe. You didn't need to. You obviously didn't need to. Why did you need to do it? He said, because why? The guy would have been tricky. You undeserved goodwill. He thought that what? I'm coming to greet him. It's totally inappropriate. And his response was, no. What do you mean? Mate nafche. He tricked himself. So therefore, you didn't need to actually clarify your statement because he himself fooled himself by assuming that he was coming to be greeted. So the question is, what's the halacha? Meaning, what's the halacha in a case if a person assumes, makes an assumption? Because we have the barrel of wine case. What's the barrel of wine case? Where he felt he had to clarify, I'm not opening this barrel of wine for you necessarily, because of you, I'm doing it anyways 3 hours later. And the other case of greeting him, which the Gemara seems to conclude that what? You didn't really need to clarify that you weren't going to greet him, because he tricked himself. How come in the case of the wine, you needed to clarify, I'm not doing it, don't give me undeserved goodwill, I'm doing it anyways in 3 hours from now, versus the escorting case where, what? You didn't need to clarify that you were going to escort him. After all, you were on your way anyways to, I was on the road. You didn't need to make such a statement because he was tricking himself. How come in the case of meeting up with, who was it? Oh my, what? With Rav and Rav Safra, with Rava, why is it that he felt that he couldn't just, that he didn't need to clarify? Why not? What's the difference? Might be the difference in the two cases. Again, the first case of opening the barrel of wine, you need to clarify. The greeting, you didn't actually need to clarify. What might be the difference between the two cases? Bella?
Potential idea. When opening the wine, you're actually doing something that could look like you're doing it for the person. Versus when people are going on the way, they're not doing anything intentionally. It just happened. And the person interpreted it that way.
Good. Anyone? Very good. Anyone else want to comment on that? Agree? Disagree? So it appears the Rishonim, and in fact, that really spent a lot of time trying to distinguish what, in fact, the halacha is. But it appears that's the case. It appears... Not everybody, but it appears, and that's what the Shulchan Aruch says in number 5, if it comes to something that I'm doing, I'm actively opening up a barrel of wine, that can be interpreted as, I'm being honored. You need to clarify. I'm going to greet somebody. I'm just walking.
and the person concludes you're coming to greet me, that you don't necessarily need to clarify. Others argue that that you, in fact, do need to clarify, unless you would have actually met that person anyways. If you would have met that person on the way anyways, you wouldn't need to clarify. If you have never met that person, you might, in fact, need to clarify. But regardless, we see here that you need to be super careful in what you do. That when you want to say something, when you do something, if a person can misunderstand what you're saying, you are liable and responsible to be 100% crystal clear in what you do, in what you say, and what people interpret and assume and think, even if it's wrong, matters. So my friends, when we advertise things, it's not just what my intent is. My intent is just shtick. That might not be good enough. I have to be very careful. What does the average person think? How is it interpreted in the world out there? Right? What do people say? So with that, and that really, now that we have at least a little bit, and again, just a taste, because there's tons to talk about, tons and tons and tons. I want to show you a couple of cases, and we'll, before we conclude. Let me give an example. Marketing techniques. Take a look at these marketing techniques. So there's a bait and switch, which everyone says is us. What's a bait and switch? You know what a bait and switch is in marketing? Bait and switch is in marketing the following. Come to my store, I will sell you a iPhone 10 or X. What's the newest one? 10? X? 10? I'm going to sell you an iPhone 10 for $200. You're like there at 2 in the morning. First 20 people, right? Oh, we don't have any. But instead, I'll sell you the 8 for $300. And it's just as good as the 10 and blah. I don't even know if there was an 8. Whatever it is, right? Or I'll sell you an Android. Rahman is an Android, right? And it bait and switch is I bait you in and I switch the product. I never intended to actually sell you that product. What a lot of stores do is what do? They bring you in, but what's my intent? I only have 2 of them at that price. The first 2 sell out in a second. It doesn't matter because I bring 200 people to my store. We sold out of that item, but don't worry, I'll sell you another one. Once I have you in my store, we know the rule is, once I have you in my store, you're dead, you're toast. I already have your money. That is 70% of marketing is getting you into my store, right? Especially in the world of online. So if I can get you in, you're driving, you're pulling into Future Shop or Best Buy, whatever the case may be, I've accomplished what I need to accomplish. Again, 70%. The rest, my salespeople are trained to nail that sale to you to spend your money, because after all, that's the mitzvah tayom. Okay, I'll give you another example. There was ambassador service. It was an airline that made the following claim. By the way, there's a professor. His name is Rabbi Dr. Aaron Levine. He really does a lot of these topics. If you're interested, take a look online. He really goes into this in great detail. Ambassador service was an airline that said, you know what we're going to do? We need to distinguish ourselves. We're going to call. Instead of just calling it first class, which everybody does, we're not going to call it first class. We're going to call it ambassador service. And we're going to advertise saying we're the only airline in the world that offers ambassador service. But here's the thing. Ambassador service has zero difference to your typical business class air travel. But they didn't advertise that. They said, the only... Can they say that? So from a government perspective, it's totally kosher. Why? Ambassador service. What does that mean? That means nothing. But here's the question. According to halacha, that's not the way we phrase it. We phrase it, what do all you think when I say that I offer ambassador service? What do you think in your head? What's your assumption? Ooh, I'm an ambassador. Everyone wants to be an ambassador, right? So if your assumption as the listener is that the service is superior, that there's better than business class, and in fact, I'd be in violation of Kenev Adar according to Halacha. So we, from a Halacha perspective, the question we ask is, what are you thinking? Right? To identify a survey, what does the average person think when I market, when I advertise something in a certain way? That really is the question that we should be asking. Let me give one more case. And again, you know, a discounted sale. Discounted sale is that I offer things at a discounted price. Well, that would be permissible. I'm allowed to discount merchandise. What about if I make it in a way that it's so cheap that I destroy competition? That actually could be a problem. It could be a problem if I make it so cheap that I destroy competition. But that's perhaps for another time. It could be a halacha problem. Yeah, if I make it so cheap. If I'm willing to lose money on something, that could be okay. But if my goal is to destroy everybody else, that could be an issue. If I claim my item is superior to every other item, if I claim something that my item is superior, I actually need to prove that. If I can prove it, it actually might be permissible. But if I point out deficiencies, if let's say my product is more expensive and your product, let's use a cleaning example, right? My cleaning items do a much better job than everything else in the market, but I'm more expensive. Those guys claim their cleaning products are great. I'm actually going to show that they're not great, that they're actually an inferior good. That they're cheaper. Spend that money if you want, but if I could actually demonstrate that and prove it, it actually might be halakhically permissible because I'm telling you why I'm more expensive. But I'm not allowed to denigrate products if they're the same price. Meaning I'm not allowed to, it's usur to denigrate, that's source number six. Rav Yossi ben Chanina miskabed b'kilin chavera in l'chaglam haba. If I shame other people just to make myself look good, that's a problem. But if I'm pointing out that those products actually have a deficiency, I'm shaming them, but I'm doing it because I don't want you to lose money, that actually might be permissible according to some. It's interesting. It's an interesting case. I'll do one more example, and maybe we'll end with that. Let me see if I can find it here. There's a toothpaste company. Oh, where's Axe? What is it, Axe? Growing Wings? Is that the... it's Red Bull. Sorry, Red Bull. Red Bull. Red Bull and Wings. What about, is Red Bull permissible or not permissible? Drink Red Bull, you're going to have wings. What would you say? Well,
is there anything in saying that everyone knows that Red Bull's not going to give you like this? Everyone knows. There's no person that watched that.
Okay, like, so it could be that it's an interesting case. Because if no one assumes that might be permissible, but there still could be a problem. Saying something which is not true is not good midot. Might not be an issue of Geneva Dad, but saying things which are simply untrue could be a problem. For those who say, it's Midvar Sheker Dirchak. That might not be a total violation of Sheker if everybody knows an exaggeration, but it could be a midot problem. If all you're doing is lying and exaggerating, it might be, even though it's an hyperbolic statement, it could be an issue. If you always do it, it's something which we should definitely avoid to do. But you're right, it wouldn't be a Geneva Dot issue, a marketing issue, but it could just be something which is perhaps an inappropriate thing to do. Or making a statement that whiter than white, my detergent makes things whiter than white. Is that a problem? What does that mean, even? What's whiter than white? But if people assume from there that your product is in fact superior, it could actually be problematic. So that really is going to be the kicker, and that's the key component, is what do people think? That is not the question necessarily that the secular world asks. The secular world is asking, you know, are you lying? Really is the issue that they ask. A very different threshold than what Allah has. Okay, there's really a lot more to talk about. Read if you want. The last page has what ended up happening in the Globe and Mail, published an article what they did to Rogers. They had to pull the article and why they had to do it, and it took a lot of investigation. And obviously, Rogers was very much against it, but they had no choice in the end. And I encourage you, and I think perhaps the most important lesson out of all this is to be very careful what you say, what's your intent, because we often live in a world where the litmus test, unfortunately, isn't that high and isn't that strong. And just to think about why we say things and why we do things, I think is so valuable that we actually say what we mean do what we say and say what we mean, I think is a tremendous value, and perhaps not as valued in the world that we live in, and something that we should perhaps return to. And again, cases of peace and all those things for lying, some we dealt last week, I included the sources. I encourage you to take a look at them, and happy to further this discussion perhaps at another time. I'm going to pass it over to Rabbi Zering.